Okay, time now is 2:50. Are we ready to start again?
Chair Kelly, yes, we are. We have majority of the testimony providers as well as the presenters for the next item.
Thank you, Hillary. Okay, back in action. The next item on today's agenda is item number 8, Department of Forestry Climate Change and Carbon Plan. This time it really is you, Ryan Gordon. Can you lead us off?
You bet. Thank you very much. Let me just get my notes up here. I assume everyone can hear me okay? Great. All right. Thank you. Well, good afternoon, Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester Hirsch, and incoming State Forester Mukamoto. My name is Ryan Gordon, and I currently serve as the Interim Partnership and Planning Program Director. Today, the board will be considering approval of the Climate Change Carbon Plan. The plan was initiated at the urging of the Governor's Office in conjunction with Executive Order 20-04, and it seeks to make the department a leader in climate smart forestry. The final product you are considering for approval today represents a substantial input of board and staff time, as well as extensive public engagement. It's undergone significant revision over the course of its development to be inclusive and address the spectrum of challenges associated with climate change. Before I introduce them to present the final version of the plan, I'd like to acknowledge the sincere effort Danny Norlander has put into researching and developing it, and helping to facilitate the process that's led to today's decision. I think we've all seen Danny's focus and expertise unfold here and in other public forums over the past 18 months. I'd also like to acknowledge others in the planning and analysis unit who have supported him, including John Tokarczyk, Andrew Yost, and Brandon Ketzel. Finally, the plan has benefited from significant review by the State Forester and division staff, especially the State Forests Program. So thank you all. With that, I'd like to invite Danny to launch into the presentation.
Good afternoon, everybody. Chair Kelly, members of the board, Acting State Forester Hirsch, and incoming State Forester Mukamoto. I'm pleased to be here with you this afternoon to go over a few points on the Climate Change and Carbon Plan, and then recommend you approve the plan is the agency's climate change plan moving forward. So we'll go through a few next steps as well on how this will interact with other planning processes underway at the department and those in the future. More information on the plan and the plan itself are available on our climate change page. The link is listed on that page. So next slide. So I do want to highlight that we are committed to a public process. The Department of Forestry has been and continues to be committed to utilizing an open and transparent public process in the work around climate change and planning. We're looking to include all voices, whether those are the climate impacted communities, tribal voices, BIPOC, populations with intergenerational poverty, rural and natural resource dependent communities, among others. And to do that, we have tried to provide ample opportunities for input and feedback from the board members and the public at board meetings through public information sessions and in group assessments and work groups with written and oral feedback, and just being open and honest with all the interested parties and available for them to have conversations with. Slide. So a review of our timeline. The governor's office requested that we develop a climate change plan in late July of 2020. At that point, we started drafting and we're intending to bring some initial goal conversation to the board at the September 2020 meeting, which was canceled for obvious reasons. That got moved to January. So we did present the goals to the board at the January meeting. And that was one of the first opportunities for public and stakeholder engagement at that time. We took the information that we gleaned from that meeting and other conversations, continued to draft the plan and had one ready, draft ready for the board and for ET executive team review within the agency in April. We took that feedback and provided a public comment period of a revised draft starting in May, which ran largely through August, just because of delays. We had intended only in June, but in getting ample feedback and to some very key parties, we pushed that through August. And we incorporated that feedback along the way through kind of an iterative feedback process where we updated and reposted the draft several times in that time period. In September, we did have a pre-decisional workshop with the board with ample opportunity for public comment to that. And we pulled a whole lot of revision suggestions and information out of that. Since then, since largely the end of September, the first part of October, we worked in the final edits and provided the final draft of the plan in mid-October for consideration. So that brings us to our hopeful plan approval today in November of 2021. Slide. So we do have 8 climate action goals, as I hope most of us can recall. Those are climate smart forestry and silviculture, fire management response in fire and smoke adapted communities, a goal on state forest management, forest lands, climate resilience, ecological function restoration, urban and community forestry goal. You heard quite a bit about urban community forestry program this morning, reforestation and afforestation goal, maintain and conserving forests, and then a research and monitoring goal. Slide. I do want to remind everybody that those are supported by a variety of actions as stated in the plan. So a few changes that have been made since the September board meeting and the feedback that we got then. Refinement of definitions and clarity for understanding. We recognize organisms living through intergenerational poverty and in rural communities are explicitly included. We include more water issues related to drought and climate impacts. We have an accommodation for wood products industry for the reduction in emissions and increase in efficiency since the 1970s. We highlighted the role of board work plans in implementation of the climate change and carbon plan. And then we also included more commitment to a public process in writing. Slide. So a few more changes that we included are alternative species amidst conifer hardwood stands as potential wildfire risk mitigation measures, as well as carbon benefits, including incentives to avoid forest conversion more explicitly, inclusion of monitoring for unintended consequences to communities, rural economies, so that we can utilize that analysis, that monitoring for adaptive planning of this plan and others, and then inclusion of additional supporting actions that provide technical assistance and support for longer term storage of wood products and biochar across the landscape. And then we also included the facilities actions related to Executive Order 2004 and previous direction. And then we also included the most recent sustainability report the department provided as an appendix. Next slide. So today we would like to recommend that the board approve the climate change and carbon plan. Alternatives to this would be that the board can decline to approve the climate change and carbon plan, and the department will continue to work towards an approval through further revision of the plan and bring it back to you at a later date. Or the board can decline to approve the plan and direct the department to stop working on the climate change and carbon plan altogether. We hope that you will approve the plan today as it stands. Slide. The next steps with an approval of the plan would be that the department will work to integrate the climate change and carbon plan into its planning processes, implementation and operationalization of the plan, including work around budget development, policy option packages as needed. And then the department would work with the board to begin the update process for the Forestry Program of Oregon that we have talked about, especially at the October retreat, and using the vision of the climate change and carbon plan as the foundation for that revision. Slide. So that's the extent of my presentation today, and hopefully that gives all of the public and stakeholders ample time to provide some feedback, as well as any questions that you have.
Okay, thank you, Danny. Thank you for all your hard work. I would want to make one comment since Commissioner Sweet earlier this afternoon specifically asked that we delay adoption on this. And I want to acknowledge that these kind of public processes are always imperfect, sometimes drafts, and, you know, ODF doesn't get everything out exactly when they should, perhaps. Sometimes stakeholders don't really wake up until it's kind of too late. So it's imperfect. And what I also want to make sure that we all realize that this is our plan, and this and as you've pointed out to us previously, Danny, as the science evolves and we get other feedback, we have the opportunity at any point to revisit and to make changes and edits to this plan. So we're calling it final, but in a way it's not. So I don't want to get us into a place, and maybe we'll have some other testimony also encouraging us to not adopt today, but I don't want to get perfect in the way of good, and I want us to all just to recognize that that we can make changes down the road. So with that, other board member comments at this point before we go to public testimony? Brenda.
Thank you, Jim. Brenda McComb for the record. First of all, I just want to thank Danny and the whole team for their hard work and responsiveness. I've engaged with them off and on through this process, and they are great listeners, and I learn a lot from them. So I just really appreciate the hard work that they put into it. The other point I would make, picking up on your comment, Jim, is that I view this plan as more of a guiding document that will change over time. And so with that in mind, you know, I do feel like this is a big step forward for the agency.
Great. Carla.
Yes. And I want to add to thanks to Danny and Ryan. You guys have done great work on this. I've had a lot of questions and feedback from the private sector. And Danny, I've shared with them what you have shared with me, and I just want to articulate that and make sure we're all on the same page. I've confirmed this is a voluntary, not a mandatory program relating to private forests, and that the state of Oregon's not going to have an active market due to we're too small a market, so we won't be running a market or actively managing a market. So this is really non-binding and not mandatory, but it's voluntary to the private sector. I think that would put a lot of people's minds at ease knowing that. Also, I think we did set out as a goal to really improve our relationship with trust counties. I think regardless of how we vote today, I think it's important we, you know, get feedback and continue to, this will be a continued working document over time as the math and the science does change. And I think today we've got some work to do internally on our own math. So I think this is an ongoing document.
Okay, anybody else? Yeah, certainly agree. This document, you know, I've always talked about it. It is a vision, and any decisions that we were to make, be they around incentives or anything else down the road, are separate decisions. That's not what this is all about. With that, I will move to the next step of inviting public testimony. So thank you for those who signed up to provide testimony to the board today. We ask that everyone in the Zoom queue to not exceed their allotted time of 2 minutes. I ask that before you start to state your full name and associated affiliation if representing a group or organization. A timer will be provided to track your time, and each commenter will be called on by the board administrator. With limited time available, anyone who exceeds their time will be prompted to provide a closing statement and then muted. Hillary, are we ready to begin?
Yes, Chair Kelly, we have 11 people signed up for this item, so I'll do my best to get us through and fairly quickly here. So I'm going to go ahead and just say thank you, everyone, again for joining us today. I will list the names in the set order and just call on each of you to begin your testimony. You'll be unmuted for your comment portion and muted upon conclusion of your comments. When you begin, a timer will be displayed for a duration of 2 minutes. When you see the timer run out, we just ask that you provide your closing comment. And since we have a larger group today, we're going to try and do two sets of five. The first set will be in this order: Janet Moore, Tyler Ernst, Brenna Bell, Craig Rawlings, Rex Storm. The second set will be in this order: Ran Schneck, Laura Wilkinson, Josie Coney, Kyle Williams, Claire Clock, and Angus McLean. So with that, let's go ahead and get ready, Ms. Moore. I'll be presenting your timer here in one moment. Janet Moore, whenever you're ready.
Oh, okay, thank you. Hi, Jeanette Moore from Coos Bay. So soil fungi sequester a significant amount of carbon, yet the carbon plan doesn't mention fungi. Using radioactive carbon isotope tracing, studies have found fungi, not plant matter, responsible for most carbon sequestration in northern forests, with up to 70% of soil carbon existing in mycorrhizal fungi. Mycorrhizal relationships not only allow a tree to sequester much more carbon, they also supply water and nutrients. The Forest Ecosystem Carbon Report does not accurately quantify forest carbon because soil carbon respiration studies do not account for the carbon sequestered by fungi. Impacts like herbicide application, soil disturbance, soil compaction, and slash burning all kill the beneficial fungi. Fertilizers also kill. Inorganic nitrogen is especially harmful because it prevents trees from forming a mycorrhizal relationship. Soil bacteria are more resistant. When fungi are wiped out, the soil becomes bacteria dominated. Bacteria dominant soils are significant sources of carbon pollution because bacteria exhale 80% of the carbon they ingest. This is why managed lands all over the world have flipped from being carbon sinks to carbon sources. Fungi, however, are able to sequester massive amounts of carbon by continually arming their hyphae with stable forms of carbon like mannans and chitin, which remain in the soil for thousands of years. As they degrade woody material, fungi also create humic and fulvic acids, which are highly stable forms of organic matter that cannot be degraded by bacteria. Forest inventory must include soil biological assessments in order to accurately measure forest carbon sequestration and to account for the sequestration that is lost when fungal networks are destroyed by logging practices. Soil structure itself is created by bacteria and fungi, and we need that pore space to hold water and sustain our forests throughout the dry months. The lack of soil fungi and soil structure is what is responsible for summer stream flow deficits and biodiversity found on clear-cut timberland. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, Mr. Ernst.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Kelly and members of the board. My name is Tyler Ernst, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Oregon Forest and Industries Council. I appreciate the opportunity to address the final draft of the department's climate change and carbon plan today. To start, I just want to say that this document has, in our minds, improved tremendously from the first draft. There's a lot of great content here. Tip my hat to Danny Norlander and the rest of the team at ODF for all their hard work on this. From the start of this process, we have remained clear about two guiding principles that we believe should provide the conceptual framework for this plan. First, policies that address potential management paradigms for the state's forest lands must be informed by long-term forest carbon dynamics that look beyond the edge of the forest to how forest resources are used and consumed post-harvest. And then second, the appropriate goal for maximizing the climate benefit of forests is not necessarily to increase carbon stocks, but to increase net sequestration from the state's forest resources. On the first point, we applaud what we perceive as movement in the right direction. The first draft of the plan contained little, if any, recognition of the climate benefits of harvested wood products, but this final draft goes much further in articulating a policy goal for promoting the manufacture and use of wood products and byproducts, including the promotion of low-carbon building materials as a climate-friendly strategy. As far as the second point is concerned, we are disappointed to see that the final draft still includes a preferred strategy for midterm harvest deferral and various nods to increasing rotation ages. Though these strategies are less pronounced than they were originally, We still believe that the plan as a whole would be improved if its goals were more clearly framed in terms of increasing net sequestration rather than merely increasing forest carbon stocks. Given that we expect that the board will likely approve the final draft today, we submit this to you as a point to address when the plan is reassessed and revised. With that, thank you again for the opportunity to provide brief comments today.
Next, Ms. Bell. Brenham.
Hi, I'm Brenna Bell, and I'm the new Forest Climate Manager for 350 PDX, where I support the volunteer-powered forest defense team. It's great to meet the board, and I look forward to working with you all more in the future. 350 PDX's organizational name derives from the fact that maintaining a stable climate depends on having approximately 350 parts per million of carbon in our atmosphere. We currently have 417 parts per million of carbon, so it's not enough to stop new emissions or even decrease existing emissions. We need to make a more concerted effort to draw down existing atmospheric carbon. And this week in Glasgow, world leaders recognized the importance of changing forest management worldwide to draw down and store more carbon to help mitigate the climate crisis. It's very timely that you are looking at adopting the ODS Climate Change and Carbon Plan right now, which is a necessary step in addressing the climate crisis already upon us. 350 PDX especially supports ODF's plan to provide $2 million annually to increase the urban tree canopy across the state. This summer's heat dome was the deadliest natural disaster in Oregon's history, and those affected live primarily in urban heat islands. Focusing ODF funds and expertise in these areas is an important step towards increasing climate justice in Oregon. However, I will note that protecting mature and old-growth forests, which is the best-known way to increase carbon storage and climate resiliency, was not explicitly included in the CCCP. I believe this omission weakens the plan and urge the Board of Forestry to enact rules to protect older trees and forests, in particular in state forests where the board has the greatest authority. In close, we see that adopting the CCCP is just the first step in a multi-year program to redefine forest management across Oregon. As the plan itself notes, there are many barriers to fully implementing the CCCP, but I can attest there are thousands of Oregonians ready and willing to work through those barriers and help the Board of Forestry take bold action on behalf of communities and ecosystems all across Oregon. Please adopt it today. Thank you.
Up next, Mr. Rawlings.
Hello, can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Kelly and esteemed members of the board. First thing I want to say is that I'm very impressed that the board and ODF have taken the leadership role to draft the Forestry Climate Change and Carbon Plan. I'm president and CEO of Forest Business Network based in Missoula, Montana. We own the International Mass Timber Conference and co-produce it with Woodworks and numerous public and private partners in Oregon. The annual conference has been held in Portland at the Oregon Convention Center for the last 6 years. First, we held in 2016. We had 500 attendees. Next April, we expect as many as 2,000 or more from 40 countries. The conference is 1 day of building tours, 2 days of educational content with a large exhibition hall. The tours will include the new PDX Mass Timber Terminal, Adidas' new North American headquarters, and Swinerton Construction's new Timber Lab facility. A lot of events are scaling back these days, especially since COVID hit. And as crazy as may sound, we're doubling down on the conference for April of next year and beyond. We've added 60,000 square feet of meeting and exhibit space, and we're so bullish on mass timber and Oregon that we've reserved space at the Oregon Convention Center through 2025. It's undeniable that Oregon has become the global epicenter of mass timber buildings and research and development, and it's humbling to me that our conference has become the largest gathering of mass timber experts in the world. After reading through the draft copy of the Forestry Climate Change and Carbon Plan, I noticed only one mention of mass timber, so that made me think that with Oregon being in global spotlight when it comes to forestry, innovation, technology, and mass timber, maybe there's an opportunity to leverage that a bit more in the plan. The draft plan is great as it stands right now, but I ask the board to consider adding language that clearly addresses the role of forest and long-term carbon storage in wood products and mass timber buildings. There's a definite interplay between forest sequestration, forest sequestering carbon and building storing carbon. Thank you, and I'm open for questions and any assistance. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, Mr. Storm.
Chair Kelly, Acting State Forester Hirsch, and members of the board, my name is Rex Storm. I am Executive VP and Certified Forester with Associated Oregon Loggers. We appreciate the work done by ODF on climate change and thus far acknowledge the vast workload. As we have testified before, getting the CCP right is paramount because climate change is of critical concern, and furthermore, because ODF needs to ensure downstream effects to economies and wood supply are mitigated. We also want to assure that upstream effects to working forest communities and to forest family businesses are mitigated. Goals around climate change in forests must be focused on achieving net sequestration. AOL believes the department's focus in the proposed CCP fails to focus on this net carbon calculation by its concentrating only on forest carbon stocks, rather than, we suggest, all carbon pools and fluxes. The lack of research included in the CCP consideration is a fatal weakness. The CCP currently lacks research on five items. First, biogenic carbon emissions from wildfire. Next, how working forests can help reduce emissions during wildfire. Next, holistic life cycle analyses. Next, managed forest carbon capture gains, and last, substitution benefits from forest product reducing carbon emissions. You have an opportunity to lead with innovation by promoting greater use of Oregon wood products, but also working with active forest management. ODF and the board will be engaging in a work to deploy the efforts of 5.6 million acres over 20 years to improve forest health. If you will take Oregon's working forest businesses together, work together with us to address the fire reality and reduce fire behaviors when they do occur. So I thank you for our considerations of our suggestions to slow and gather additional informed research and involvement with more time and investment in doing the right thing for Oregon Forest. We together could build greater forest community consensus around a CCCP. Thank you.
Next up, we will have the remaining folks in the order of Rand, Laura, Josie, Kyle, Claire, and Angus. So with that, Mr. Schneck, you're up.
Chair Kelly and members of the board, my name is Rand Schenck, forestry lead for the Metro Climate Action Team, a group entirely comprised of dedicated volunteers. I encourage you to adopt the climate change and carbon plan. We are especially pleased that, as stated, ODF will be a leader in promoting climate smart forestry. How wonderful that the plan acknowledges that a business as usual approach will no longer work to address needed mitigation and adaptation. We greatly appreciate that the plan notes the need to account for forestry-related carbon impacts. We know that by far the biggest bang for our bucks in using natural climate solutions is to have longer logging rotations. ODF will be a key player in meeting sequestration goals for natural working lands, as the plan recognizes that most of this sequestration will come from the forest sector. We want to share our working definition of climate smart forestry. Climate smart forestry optimizes forest carbon sequestration, carbon storage, and forest resilience while minimizing greenhouse gas emissions. Practices generally include longer harvest rotations, protecting old growth and mature forests, and maintaining a diversity of species, ages, and structure. I believe we are all clear on the need for longer rotations and the importance of preserving mature and old growth trees. We look to the board to use all its powers of influence to find ways to incentivize longer rotations. The CCCP points to a transformative purpose for ODF, one that has the potential to truly engage and empower staff throughout the agency. Transformative leadership will be the fuel. I applaud the board's willingness to be a key agent of change in this transformation. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, Ms. Wilkinson.
Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, my name is Laura Wilkinson. I'm the State Forest Policy Director with Hampton Lumber. State agencies are under intense pressure to do what they can to address global climate change. This is understandable and important work. But unfortunately, in the rush to do something, really anything, some policy prescriptions appear to be more symbolic than effective, and we fear ODF is falling into this trap. Policies that aim to delay or prevent harvest for the sake of increased carbon storage are costly, harmful to local economies, and will do little to address global climate change. If only Oregon existed in a bubble and prohibited new home construction and repairs, increasing carbon storage in our forests might pencil out as a reasonable way for the state to meet its goals. Of course, we are not isolated from the world or global trade, nor do we have any intention of limiting construction. Leakage of wood product manufacturing out of Oregon reduces the effectiveness of regional and state level climate policies. A 2019 policy brief from the Center of Environmental Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley conservatively estimated that the leakage rate from reduced timber harvesting in the United States is at least 80%. ODF and the board cannot disregard this impact leakage will have on the ability to reduce global emissions. If indirect emissions due to leakage are not calculated and accounted for, the carbon reductions and storage estimates will be greatly overestimated. U.S. is the largest lumber market in the world, and yet we are still very dependent on imported lumber. Canada has seen its market share to the U.S. decline over the last 5 years as it loses ground to European lumber exporters like Germany and Sweden. Russia has also become a top exporter of U.S. grade lumber. Demand is expected to grow, and if domestic supplies are further constrained, we will become increasingly reliant on foreign wood. The capacity for sustainable wood production is what sets the Pacific Northwest apart from other regions, and it's our most significant contribution to global fight against climate change. We have the resources, the infrastructure, and the workforce to be a global leader in the production and expanded use of green building materials. If we only focus on carbon storing forests to the detriment of local wood manufacturing, we will miss out on meaningful opportunities to be a global leader. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, Ms. Coney. Josie, when you're ready.
For the record, my name is Josie Kerner, and I am a small woodland owner with 80 acres with a forest management plan. I wholeheartedly support the CCC plan P, and I know there are many small woodland owners like myself who manage our land for the various ecological benefits they provide for us and for future generations. This year, the USDA Forest Service reported on a 2018 national survey of small woodland owners with some interesting findings. In the Oregon survey of family forest owners with 10 or more acres, the top three reasons given for owning their land indicating very important were one, beauty of the scenery, 64%, two for the nature protection, 60%, and three for wildlife habitat, 59%, followed by water protection, 56%, and privacy, 51%. These responses are very similar to the National Survey of Small Forest Owners. On the question of timber products as the reason for owning, only 16% of small forest owners indicated that this was very important, and 17% as an important factor for owning, while 38% indicated that timber products were not important, and 14% said they were of little importance. Together, 52% of forest products was not an important factor in their ownership decision. Conclusion, there are far more small family owners who own their land primarily for conservation reasons compared to those interested in harvesting forest products. Most manage their land for environmental reasons and recognize the mature trees and older forests also serve as a natural carbon sinks that mitigate climate impact. Our interests are not aligned with commercial industry management goals of maximizing and with short-term rotations and acres of clear cuts. I am certainly not aligned with the interests of Wall Street logging companies or real estate investors who extract our natural resources, don't adequately protect our water resources, and pay virtually no Oregon income taxes. Yes, we need profit.
Please.
Okay, so I urge you to support. It has longer rotations and climate smart forestry practices included, which we need. Thank you.
Up next, Mr. Williams.
Chair Kelly, members of the Board of Forestry and State Forester Hirsch. For the record, my name is Kyle Williams, Director of Forest Protection for the Oregon Forest and Industries Council. I'm here to continue messaging the importance of fire control. Putting bad fire out aggressively in the summer and expanding the use of prescribed fire outside of fire season, combined with active management as paramount strategies in the quest for maximizing net carbon sequestration within the plan. We don't even give ourselves a chance to manage for success if the lands we are counting on to be green engines of climate mitigation are turning black at a rate of nearly 500,000 acres a year in Oregon over the last decade. You've heard the numbers about acres burned, number of ODF team rotations, and countless other anecdotes about the severity of fire season 2021, and a lot of that was weather related. Indeed, it was a challenging year in some parts of the state. But landscape condition and management strategy also drove our fire season. Consider this. ODF sent teams to 7 project fires this summer, mostly on private lands, and the longest duration assignment was just over 2 weeks. As a counter to that relative success, there was a national forest this summer who hosted a parade of fire teams for 103 days straight. Here's what those teams had to say. Unsafe conditions created by standing dead trees and steep ground forced crews to disengage and identify alternate strategies. Next, managed timber stands within the Jack Fire perimeter are slowing its progression, while dead and down fuels in the Rough Patch complex are heavier, more continuous, and ignite readily due to the drought. And if the point's still missing, here are two from a fire manager and researcher that worked on Beechey Creek last summer. We knew from the beginning that Beechey Creek was going to be hard because of where it was located. No easy access, and even if we did, it was on a landscape that makes firefighting really hazardous, with steep slopes and true old growth forest. I'll leave you with this. According to the Copernicus Atmospheric Monitoring Service, wildfires in Oregon emitted 17 million tons of CO2 this summer and 132 million tons west-wide. If our goal is net carbon sequestration, we should be doing everything in our power to reduce emissions from wildfire in the first place. We'll continue to advocate for more focus on fire suppression, active management, and prescribed fire, and would suggest it be expanded in scope and intent as the department and state move forward. Thank you for your time.
Up next, Mr. Clock.
Chair Kelly and members of the board, my name is Claire Clock, and I'm a small forest landowner in Corbett, Oregon. Urging your adoption of the ODF climate change plan. I'm personally awestruck by the rapidity of putting a plan together when only about 3 years ago did I even hear the word climate change in an Oregon Board of Forestry meeting. On a personal basis, our forests are dying, and even the young trees that should be growing another 20 years are having problems with drought. The data that was, there's a point mentioned this morning that carbon was not even a part of the planning process. And that's true as of 3 years ago, because it was directed by the board. Now it is, and I'm encouraged to see that the board is coming forward, adopting a plan that, of course, will need to be adjusted. And I urge sequestration on state and private lands, and what you can do to influence sequestration on the federal lands. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing how the plan works. Thank you.
Thank you. And closing us out for item 8 is Angus McLean.
Thank you, Chair Kelly and members of the board. My name is Angus McLean. I'm representing Pacific Forest Trust. I'm here to provide a brief comment in support of the Climate Change and Carbon Plan. First, we'd like to thank ODF staff, especially Danny Norlander, for their excellent work preparing it and incorporating public feedback. We thank the board for guiding the plan's development and would urge that it be adopted. This plan is a significant step in articulating a strategy to make the department a leader in managing to protect and improve forest functions in a changing climate while simultaneously mitigating atmospheric carbon. In particular, the plan's recommendation to provide financial incentives such as easements to lengthen rotations on private forests is crucial to accomplishing the bulk of the Global Warming Commission's additional sequestration targets. Thank you again, and we look forward to supporting further efforts to implement climate smart forest management in Oregon.
Thank you. Testimony providers, we appreciate your participation. You're welcome to stay in the Zoom meeting for the remainder of this item. However, we ask that you remain muted and disengage your video. For those who are also signed up for item 9, you will be renumbered for that item shortly. Chair Kelly and members of the board, this concludes our public testimony portion for item 9, item 8.
Thank you, Hillary. Board members, any questions or comments from what we've just heard? I'll have one comment. I just want to would like to talk about how far we've come in the last 3 years. I came on this board just over 3 years ago, and as Mr. Clark said, at that time, the word climate change essentially it did not come up in board meetings, and I brought it up, and I was not alone, but boy, it felt pretty lonely every time. And I brought it up, there wasn't much reaction. And so look where we are today. I mean, 3 years ago, I remember every year the Oregon Forest Resources Institute put out a little booklet about forestry in Oregon. 3 years ago, it did not mention climate change once. And yet today we hear all this testimony for on both sides, good testimony, but nobody is got their head in the sand anymore. You know, we all know what we're dealing with here. And so I really want to congratulate everyone on how far we've come with this. And unless there's any other comments, I would request that someone present a motion.
This is Brenda McComb for the record. I move that we accept the CCCP presented by Danny Norlander.
This is Ben Doimling. I second.
Okay, a motion has been made and seconded, so we're going to move right to a vote on that. And so I will call out each of your names. So I'll start. Carla Chambers.
Aye.
Ben Doimling.
Aye.
Shonda Ferrari.
Aye.
Joe Justice.
Aye.
Brenda McComb.
Aye.
And I, Jim Kelly, am an aye as well. And with that, the board has reached consensus. The motion carries. Thank you all. Thank the board. Thank you, Danny, and the rest of the staff, and for all of the public engagement we've had on this, a tremendous amount. Just huge thanks to everyone.